thatgreatbusinessshow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
You are most welcome to a very, very special episode. Episode 46 of That Great Business Show, posting on the 6th of August, 2021. I'm your host, Conal O'Moran. You'll find me on Twitter at ConalOM. I say it's very special because we have Ireland's Queen of Retail, Breege O'Donoghue, with us. She's a former board member and global group director in charge of business development and new markets at Penny's Primark. Breege, who retired 4 years ago, spent 37 years at Primark, during which time the brand grew into a massive Irish global success story. It now has almost 400 stores across 14 jurisdictions and employs 80,000 people, near enough. Oh, and please don't for a minute think that Breege is retired. She's still on many boards, and she's also a mentor of our Team GBS favourite, the Enterprise Ireland-backed Going for Growth programme for female entrepreneurs. You can read all about Breege's progression from the hospitality industry into the boardroom of the then revolutionary fashion retailer elsewhere. But regular listeners know that we do business differently. That's why we've asked Breege to give us a retailing masterclass today. But before I do, I want to tell you about our sponsor, DeFacto Shaving Oil, the world's best shaving oil for women and men. It's the best anyone can get. You can get it online at defactoshave.com. Without DeFacto, you wouldn't have this masterclass, and that would not be a good thing.
Backing great women-led businesses on every show. That Great Business Show.
Breege O'Donoghue, it is my hugest pleasure to have finally got you here. Welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you.
Breege, you've asked me a couple of times about what questions I'm going to ask you and stuff like that, and I told you, you are a talker. And even in the first 10 minutes, just before we started recording this, you had me smiling, laughing, and you're telling me stories. And I don't know even where to start, because as I say to people, if they want to know your prehistory before going to into Penny's, well, that's all can be read online, because I want you to tell us everything you know about retailing and a little bit more. We'll get onto that in a second. What was the biggest shock, difference, change you found in retailing coming from hospitality where you had worked?
There were similarities, first of all. And that's, you know, because there was a lot of common, it was all about the customer. But in terms of, in retailing, it was about having, you know, the right product for the customer. It was about producing or having available what you sell, not selling, you know, what you produce. And I think that's a key element in terms of retailing.
Talk me through that slowly again. You're listening to the customer, basically, is it?
Yeah, you produce what you sell, not sell what you produce. So exactly. The customer is always right, and provide the customer in terms of whether whatever that product is and value for money, whether that be a value chain or be at the luxury end, the same principle applies.
When Penny's, which became Primark for different reasons, when Penny started in Dublin, it was but a single little shop. When you joined, how many shops were there?
24.
So on that, at that stage, in Irish terms, you're doing okay. You've moved into the UK. Why did you join Penny's?
Well, I'd spent 17 years in the hospitality business. Loved the life of the hospitality business. And of course, I spent 3 years of that in the early part of my career in Switzerland and Germany. That was also very special because it was very different. It opened my eyes coming from the west of Ireland. You know, in terms of the work involved, in terms of the culture in Switzerland, they speak four different languages, four different cultures. And, you know, in terms of the weather was absolutely different. So in a sense, that opened my eyes to other things. For example, you know, I wasn't aware on my first day in Switzerland that, first of all, to be there at 6:30 in the morning because I was living an hour and a half away, that I got up at 4:30. And then when I went into work, that you kissed your supervisor or your manager on both cheeks. Now, that was quite different. That didn't happen.
That was pre-COVID, I'll tell you.
Yeah, it certainly was. That certainly was quite different. But so therefore, there was an eye-opening. This was entirely different. And maybe because, you know, Ireland is an island, so to speak. So this was tremendous exposure. So those 17 years were just wonderful experience. A lot of time in Northern Ireland in the 70s. And that, of course, was all about security with major challenges. And then I had a call. I was like a piece of furniture in the hotel group I was in at the time, and had managed a hotel and was, you know, had managed schools with the great Rory Murphy of Ashford Castle fame, etc. And Arthur, I had a call from Arthur Ryan, you know, to say, would I come and talk to him?
Now, sorry, I'm going to stop you there about Arthur Ryan. For those who do not know the now late, unfortunately, Arthur Ryan, he was an absolute legend, possibly a genius. Unfortunately, I never met him.
He was an amazing man. And sadly, he's no longer with us since the 8th of July, 2019. And we really miss him very much. He was very talented. He was a retailer at heart, but he was also a very kind man. People used to think that he was a tough man, not just a tough bone in his body. He was a wonderful boss, a great leader. He delegated and allowed you to get on with your job. He was a great supporter of women, but he also had, you know, tremendous, it was fun. We were just like a family in terms of, you know, and that continued for many, many years. I do recall on my first major meeting with him in London, 1979, and we're staying in this very nice hotel, and we had a business meeting, he and I and some business people, at 7:30 in the morning. And we were to meet at just before that, as we did. But as I went to pick my shoes from outside the door, as you did in those days, not anymore, thankfully, I didn't have any shoes. So I headed off to the meeting with the white slippers from the hotel bedroom, didn't bat an eyelid, neither did he. Of course, discovered sometime later that he had arranged to steal my shoes to see how I would behave.
Now, was he having a joke, or was he testing your mettle?
Absolutely a joke. And there was another occasion when my late husband died, and he knew it had been a tough time for me. And he knows that I'm into health and fitness, and he arranged me to go to Champneys in the UK, which was then a great treat for, you know, for a long weekend. And as I did, and a short time, you know, I was there just for a day. We're doing the hiking. We're doing all the usual things with groups. And then this young man from the concierge staff keeps running out to me, and he says, Gregory Peck's secretary is on the phone to talk to you. So, my goodness. So, yeah, I talked to Gregory Peck's secretary, and he said, Mr. Ryan has told me that you have bereavement. I'm in the area, and I'm coming to have dinner with you tomorrow. Now, he said, would you kindly arrange to maybe, you know, this secretary book a suite for Mr. Peck, put some champagne and flowers. I duly did all of that. It's fine, you know, then following morning, I'm out on my track at very early in the morning in the countryside of near Amersham. And this little fellow comes out again, Mr. Peck's secretary, still on the phone. And anyway, took the message. Well, I'm actually not for lunch. I'll be there after lunch. Anyway, it turned out that was Arthur all the time. So I ran out of the place. I ran out of the place because I thought, this is just a mad Irish woman. So that was his type of a tremendous mimic. He was actually talking to me, you know, and I know him like, you know, really well. So very talented, very kind, a long legacy, great encouragement. You know, great encouragement, wanted people to open their eyes, wanted to travel. You know, he was a bit like, I suppose, Alexander the Great, you know, we're going to travel the world.
Tell me three great things that he taught you.
There are no mistakes, they're just learning.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot.
It's all right to look for help. In fact, it's very positive. And you're probably at your strongest when you're weakest, and to realize that. But also, I think in terms of the product you'd say, as I said earlier, you know, produce or make available what you sell. You know, not really just be trying to sell what you can buy. In other words, the customer is absolutely paramount.
And where did he get this insight? because that is the essence of Penny's or Primark. And so many others look at Primark and they say, how do they do it?
Well, there are a number of ways. The first thing you'd say that Penny's, Primark, then and now, was always a question of hiring smart people and they'll teach you what to do. Going into new markets, it was about, we don't necessarily want to have an Irish business in Spain or in Germany. We want to have a Spanish business. So let them tell us. In terms of when you ask, how does Penny's or Primark do it? It's different than other companies. You know, firstly, it's a volume business. It has long-standing relationships with suppliers all over the world. It has a very strong code of conduct for suppliers by which they're bound. And if they deviate from that code of conduct, they maybe we would assist them, help them. But at the end of the day, if that trust is broken, that's the end of the business of the business relationship.
But let me stop you there and ask you, that is now... When you went in at 20, was it 26 stores, you said?
24.
Mm. That couldn't have been the way it was operating because it was a completely different market, a completely different world.
Well, you know, for example, going into Britain in the 70s was a huge challenge, you know.
And you went into North Britain, with North England.
No, Derby was Derby. the first high street store. It was a good
and
location.
Why Derby?
Oh, you know, you could say, well, you know, it was learning. It was you know, first of all, there was space available. It had a population. It was a place from which the business felt could learn. And also it was a good pilot, you know, in terms of make your mistakes.
Rather than going to London, is that it?
Well, absolutely. Well, also there'd be a cost factor in that as well. You know, we're lean. And, you know, we're hugely, hugely focused on, always focused on costs. Always paranoid about the competition. And, you know, in Derby, for the size of place that it was, there was ample competition there from learning. But opportunity. And, you know, I can't say that, you know, that there was a big plan around Britain. It was just saying, now we've a little solid business in Ireland. Let's get across the sea and what it's like. And it was, of course, very, very different because consumer behaviour was quite different. Taste and merchandise was quite different.
Now, and how are you measuring that? Or how did you measure that?
Well, you know, I can remember that most Saturdays, led by Arthur, there'd be a number of us on a small plane from Dublin. You know, that's some of the buying team or wherever. That was one, you know, supporting the store management, supporting the store team, the buying team looking at the competition, and it was feet on the ground. And that was hugely important in terms of what's happening. Because, of course, we were making lots and lots of learnings. There were different behaviours. And of course, you could afford to make plenty of mistakes, if I call them that, at that stage, because we're small and we're growing. But there was an enthusiasm and there was an energy and there was a passion. But this was all fun, but it was hugely competitive.
Small, yes. But a mistake for a small firm can hurt and hurt badly. Did you ever actually hit a wall saying, oh my God, this is one too many?
Oh, little walls maybe, but never one so big enough. Because we had, you know, at the same time, and still today is the same, courage is a big part. Don't be afraid to take a risk. You know, that's what business is about. Learn, make this, have all these learnings, package them. And make sure you don't repeat them, insofar as that's practically possible. And the buying teams are hugely, hugely important. And Arthur, of course, in his own background was a buyer. So he knew everything. He would know the shirt that you were wearing, how many stitches to the inch that was. He would tell you where that cotton was made. And I'm disappointed to say that it's not a quality shirt. I wish it was a Primark shirt you're wearing.
It's a Thomas Pink shirt. Very high quality, I can tell you. Former Irish firm. Going back to this, hey, we take a buyer. What is the essence of the buyer? Is it just, where could a buyer learn his or her business best?
Oh, well, first of all, they'll have experience, probably go to college. TU Dublin has a wonderful factory and we have long, long relationships with TU Dublin where we hire people from TU Dublin, have been doing that for many, many years, providing it with the best of young graduates, and many of them now are in very senior positions in Primark here and outside. And indeed, you know, we have supported the Arthur Ryan Retail Centre in Grange Gorman in TU Dublin. And that is a very lovely project. But to go back to your specific answer, you know, they will have to understand something about fabric. Where does this fabric come from? Where is it made? What is it? What is its composition? What is it in terms of, you know, what kind of instructions do I give the customer in terms of taking care of this product? Two, they have to know how to use the tools. And the tools might be being at the festivals, not many this year, being at the festivals all over the world, you know, whatever that might entail, being on the high streets, being in the nightclubs, being in, you know, when the swimwear shows in Monte Carlo, being down there the year before. What are people wearing? So they have a nous for having their eyes open, for being curious. And then all the tools, there are excellent technological tools, WGSN and others. And of course, they have support. They have support from designers, from technologists in terms of, will, you know, in terms of what fabric, what kind of fabric should go into your shirt or whatever. And the merchandisers, financial people. So it's a whole team of people that guides that. Because remember, the Primark buyers are buying very well in advance of the season in the main. And they're doing that because, of course, for the supplier to be able to plan. I recall sitting in China with one very long-term supplier, Primark, and I said to her, you know, how are things for you? How do you work with Penny's Primark? And she said, oh, I love it. She said, this is like as if I had a 100-bedroom hotel. For the last 25 years, 60 of those rooms are for Primark. So I know, you know, that pays my wages, that pays my overheads, and I know that I'm going to get that. I know that I'm going to be paid on time. I know I'm going to have good relationships with the buying teams, and then I go and sell the other 40%. So that would be, you know, so buyers would be a very serious part of that.
I had the lovely Helen McAlinden on the podcast a couple of months back, and I did ask her a deep philosophical question. Where does fashion come from? Can you answer it?
I think the material, because that's made 2 years in advance.
Oh.
You know, it may be 2 years. It may be more because you've got to put fabric into production. So what is the fabric? What is the colour of the fabric? That's one. Two, in terms, of course, what are the celebrities wearing? Whether that continues after COVID is another question. But what are the celebrities wearing? What is really in the, if you look at, you know, the high fashion shows, what are those garments going to look like as if they were commercial? You know, for example, you can buy a garment, a virtual garment now, if you have £9,000 or maybe £15,000. So, you know, the buyers are looking at that. The people who plan are looking well ahead at that and then bringing it all together to make it commercial.
Is there an element of not so nice copying about that? And that is what you're doing, isn't it?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Insofar as, of course, they have to, buying teams, look all over the world, you know, and they see what's best. Because obviously, you know, if you look at Primark is in a number of states in America. They're a patchwork of different kind of countries. So really what one is going to be wearing down in Miami, you're not necessarily going to be wearing that in Chicago, right? So that's, or even between, you know, if you take Glasgow, or if you take Edinburgh and take Dublin, there are differences. So the buying teams have to take all of that into account.
And is that all done on a spreadsheet almost? I mean, if you're buying, I'll make up a number, 10,000 units for Dublin, 20,000 for Edinburgh, but they have to be in different fabrics or different colours or?
No. Generally, it will be all the same merchandise in the main. There will, of course, be tweaking. In Spain, they love their camels. In Spain, they absolutely love their slippers. Hard to understand at first, but of course they have a lot of marble floors.
Ah, I read that. You know? I said, yeah, that's right.
In America, they don't have duvets. They have comforters. So that means the duvet and its cover can go into the washing machine all at once. You know, so there is tweaking. You know, so it's not, you know, in Holland, the women are taller. That doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, that the jeans are going to be that bit longer. It's a question of a selection from a broad number of garments. So really, it's looking at the. It's not as simple as a spreadsheet. You know, this is about inspiration. It is about knowing what the customer will wear, knowing what the customer will want. It's about being able to feel the fabric, understand the quality of the fabric, etc. Know how it's going to look on the person.
So, let us take larger countries like the States. You've already said that there are regional variations. Are there such regional variations in little old Ireland?
Oh, there are certain ones, you know.
Get away. Tell me more.
In the 70s here, they were wearing the miniskirts. They weren't wearing them tralee. You know, in the 70s, we had long hair, we had pop music, we had psychedelic dress.
I had long hair back then.
Okay, but we didn't have that in every single part of Ireland.
But this is a different Ireland now. Are there regional variations, say between Belfast and Dublin?
There are differences. Not major differences, you know, compared to what there might have been. Because, of course, look at the communications industry. And what it was in the 1970s, you know. It's a different ballgame.
Breege, I'm going to hold you there because I have to take a quick break, and we'll come straight back to you for our little masterclass, or our big masterclass, as I'm now learning. And these great insights from Breege O'Donoghue are brought only through the support of De Facto Shaving Oil, makers of the world's best shaving oil. Switch from unhealthy shaving foams to all natural shaving oil, and you'll save your skin, your pocket, and your planet. Check out defactoshave.com.
You're listening to That Great Business Show.
ThatGreatBusinessShow.com.
ISME is the independent SME association, looking after the interests of all types of businesses across Ireland. ISME membership includes invaluable HR and general advice, training, promotional tools, members' discounts, events, and networking with fellow SMEs. ISME membership starts from €195 with easy pay options. ISME. Join today at isme.ie or email membership@isme.ie.
And I am back with Breege O'Donoghue, doyenne, I'm going to call you this time, of Irish fashion. I am loving this. Do please tell me more. What was it like in the boardroom of Penny's Primark when you're trying to make decisions? Was there good tussles?
Before I answer that, I want to finish what I was saying about what makes Primark what it is today.
I love you because you're going to tell me to shut up.
And I did talk about independent audit is very important. Audit and independent audit, several thousand last year. And that means that Primark has key people in key sourcing locations that ensure that the garment is made not at the expense of the person working on making the garment, but that it is made according to the standards to ensure that the people are paid properly in terms of overtime, in terms of holidays, in terms of health and wellness, which is very important. Education, investment in people has always been important for Penny's Primark, as it is today. And that includes education and investment with the factories who make the Penny's Primark garments. So it enables, that increases productivity. It enables the young people, obviously, to be promoted and to move on to work in other areas of the business. And I've seen that at first hand, whether it's the factories in China, in India, in Bangladesh, you know, where you have leaders of little groups. And they are, I've seen in factories where they are encouraging their own little team and to work and to, you know, do things in a more efficient way. And of course, take care of themselves in terms of personal care. That is really very important in terms of all aspects of personal care, not just only about wellness, it's about contraception and etc. And they bring that to their villages. So it's a question of all that really coming together. Working with the suppliers and the buying teams are a key part of that.
Were you hands-on with that? Or did you go into the Bangladeshi villages or the Indian villages and see this for yourself?
Well, it's not that long ago since I was in this lovely, in Gujarat. It's a large state in the west of India, as we know. And Primark set up there some years ago, set up in order to empower women and to produce cotton more sustainably. So it was a business, 1,151 women were chosen as part of this program, and was on and off the job, so to speak. So they were trained, you know, in all aspects of cotton. and also as well as having some classroom tuition. So I visited these people. I visited a number of these, and this was in 2016, and out in Gujarat. And I saw a number of these women, you know, in groups. Now, their husbands weren't very keen, first of all, but here they were meeting me. We were sitting down at 45 degrees heat. I know. Now, remember, their day was, they went out to work. They got, first of all, they got the children out of school after milking the buffaloes. Then they headed out in 40, 45 degrees heat, and they were there from 6 o'clock in the evening. They came home and they had the same routine. So, you know, in the first couple of years, for them in terms of cotton growing, the profits had increased in excess of 200%. There was a considerable reduction in pesticides, considerable reduction in the use of water, and of course there was more profit, other things as well, but that in the main. So I said to them, you know, and in particular groups, you know, how has this helped you? Generally, I bought a tractor, I bought an acre of land, I bought some irrigation equipment, but 95% of each of those 10, 11 groups said, it's for the education of my children. Now, mind you, there was one gentleman there and he said, now, I'll have to tell you, Breege, I bought a motorbike because this is a dry state so I could go to the next one. Now, that...
Good for him.
That program now extends to 185,000 women in other countries as well. So, you know, that's...
And that's driven by Penny's Primark.
Absolutely. In terms with Cotton Connect and with the Self-Employed Women's Association. It's obviously... So investment, I'm saying, in terms of that, has always been very important. Our support in the community, you know, is a very big program at the moment, a 6 million program over a couple, over a number of 3 years in terms of education, educating young people in Cambodia. So it's a question about giving back, is working with them. And of course, there are beneficiaries. In terms of Cotton Connect, you know, in terms of that program, the customers benefit. The women, they were empowered. Now there were people, they were strong people in their community. They were strong people in their own villages. And meanwhile, they saw that we have this money to educate our children. Lots of not good lessons to be learned.
Back to the boardroom question. Just referring to the Cotton Connect one, where did that drive come from? Who, I cannot imagine your boardroom, I obviously never saw it. Lots of voices, I'm sure. Was there one voice driving
that?
Oh,
look, there's a major, it's a major team if you think there are now, you know, 80,000 people there. They're major teams in the leadership. There's an ethical team in terms of everything to do about the environment because we care about the environment. Of course, we care about the people. We care about our suppliers. So in a sense, to a question, what is the right thing? What is the right thing to be doing? Always do the right thing, whatever that is. So it's a question, you know, this would have come, the buying teams, the logistical teams, the ethical team would be in together and say, you know, this is planned well in advance. This goes on all the time. In terms of the boardroom, to go back, you know, we were a small board.
How small?
Well, initially, you know, four people, then five people, and famously later on we were eight people. Pardon?
Famously so. People always, the newspapers and lots of other media used to always wonder about the famous four.
The gang of four.
Yeah.
You know,
what was that like?
It was fun. Yes, of course we did have rows and we did have challenges. You know, and we
were
say,
you
well,
good at rows?
Absolutely, you know. I'd say, you know, if you never had differences, you'd never really be good friends. But it was always important, and I know it still happened, certainly in my latter years also. Once you left that boredom, you're on the same page. Good discussion, good argument, a lot of involvement from the younger people, encouraging them, coming up with ideas. So a lot of debate and make that decision. Sometimes a bad decision is better than no decision, you know, and that would be, let's get on with it, let's move on.
You and your team made a magnificent success of Penny's so far, probably, and hopefully will continue to grow and all good things. Do you ever think that there is the opportunity for another Irish company to do the same?
Well, first of all, I was just a small cog in a big wheel.
Well, you were a big cog in a small wheel, maybe.
No, and it's really about that team. It's really about that team effort. It's the same today, and it has outstanding leadership under Paul Marchant, who also is an outstanding retailer, you know, in terms of the product. Ireland is a small country, you know, insofar as there are a lot of other very good businesses in Ireland, you know, whether you're looking at similar end to Penny's. They are there and they're doing a good job. After, you know, we have 5 million people. I mean, I think what we want to see is that businesses that we might have lost during COVID, that they're restored or replaced in some way, and that our city centres and our town centres, and where we have additional space, that we're, that, you know, that we get to work on those and create areas where people are coming into the city, coming into town. Footfall is important. So whether that's a drive in terms of health and wellness, in terms of leisure, in terms of new brands, well, that is, I think, one of our priorities at the moment for retailing.
Do you think the High Street will survive and revive and come back as it was?
The High Street will always survive.
Will it?
Bricks and mortars are hugely important. You know, and the excitement. Listen, if I want to buy a perfume, I can't smell it unless I go and, you know, that. If I want to buy a cotton shirt or a lovely wool jumper, I want to be able to feel that, you know.
But once you like your brand of perfume, you can then reorder online. And if you're a man in particular, once you like a such and such shirt, that's it as far as I'm concerned. I'll just buy that online whenever I need
one. That sounds terribly dull, if I may say so.
I am very dull.
Well, you just look at, for example, look at La Saint-Martin-Tenay in Paris. It's a major department store. It's been closed for a couple of years. It just reopened recently. You know, it's a 150-year-old store. It has a hotel, offices, spa, leisure areas. It has a concierge. It has salons. It has VIP service. Now, you know, investors are not putting that money into something like that unless it's giving a return. So go back to your question. There will always be a place for bricks and mortars, provided, you know, that we are offering an experience to the customer. And by experience, I mean, I'll take Primark in Birmingham. It's a value store. It's a value retailer. It's 3 years in existence. It was a small shopping centre which Primark bought. 5 floors of fashion. But apart from that, you're in this store. It's a very beautiful environment. You have wide aisles, very comfortable shop. You have 3 restaurants. One of them, a Disney cafe, the first outside their own, you know, Disney World and their cruises, so to speak. It has a lab where you can have your T-shirt printed. It has lovely seating areas, places where you can charge your phone. It has all of the. It has a wonderful barbers, and I'm sure you'd be very interested
Wasted
in that.
Wasted on me, I'm afraid, yes.
And it has a wonderful beauty salon covering all kinds of things for women. Now, if a value retailer is investing on that, there's a real message. That's what the customer is expecting. They have come from all of the UK and far afield to have seen this very beautiful store, you know. So in a sense, it's about, I think, giving the customer experience. It's about also, I think, data, and data is very important. But if customers are providing data, trust is even more important. So that's where there's an onus on retailers. In terms of the insights, what is the customer going to be buying tomorrow,
I was just going to ask this question about how do you make it up? Like, okay, shirts, trousers, dresses or whatever, yes. What about all the rest of the stuff? Where do those ideas come from?
Customer insights. Data is hugely important. You know, you expect to see that the virtual fitting room. I expect to see on the windows that the tag on the garment is going to tell me everything about the provenance of that garment, where it was made, what the carbon emissions were in its transportation, if that is appropriate. In the same way, I expect the prices on the, you know, on the shelves to talk to me, to tell me the same thing. That's where retailing is going. And it's all about the customer making it an experience that they're coming. Yeah, they'll be coming to shop or buy something.
There's something that I read, that a term that you used that I obviously never heard before. When people go into Primark and they experience Primania. Is that your word? I heard of Beatlemania, maybe Spice Girl mania or whatever. Primania, Premania, never heard of it, but I know what you're going to say.
Oh, no. Well, it's there, you know. I think it's there on social media in terms of strength.
Premania?
I think you'll have to ask the customers because it's they who kind of, you know, they who coined that phrase.
I did see at the opening of the stores is the queues. That does speak volumes, doesn't it?
It does. You know, I recall many, you know, in the continent, we opened many stores. we were loved, you know. Now, if I take Spain, you know, during the difficult times and the 05s, etc., it wasn't unusual, you know. They have a big banner outside the centre. Ooh la la, Primark is coming. You know, they welcomed us with open arms, and it was about as much the coffee shops, the people who made the keys, the cleaners, the taxi drivers. And it was all of these kind of things that, you know, that were set because it was about footfall, you know, in every sense of the word. They presented us with cakes. They presented us with congratulations cards. Why? Because we were just bringing footfall. And it was about the numbers we employed. But also remember, if our store was being prepared for 6 months, you know, all the business in the area were doing lots of business in terms of the store being kitted out and all that goes with that. Now, that was extremely common. And I know when a former Taoiseach opened our Berlin store, he said, This is like a pop star. He said, I wish I could get this at the Ardèche, you know, because that was the nature of the thing. I recall being at a particular store in Spain being opened. We had the mayor of the city there, and she said to me, oh my God, she said, I see my two daughters are in the queue. They're expected to be in school. And also it wasn't unusual in certain places, you know, that in certain countries or regions that they got the day off of a Primark was operating, you know. So in a sense, it did draw crowds. But we always remember too, when we were going into a new place, we sat down with the authorities, we sat down with the police, we sat down with the fashion colleges. We obviously talked to the media to learn, to tell them about what our model was, why we were there. So we had full support, and we always and still do accommodate, support community, local community in the area. Whatever the need is, normally the mayor or the authorities will tell us what is that particular need in the city. So just as any good employee would do, we also do that.
Now, you mentioned there the fashion colleges, and I meant to ask you when you were talking about TU Dublin and others, you know, these kids who come through and they're very, very creative and all, and they're making weird and wonderful and wild designs. Does anybody take those seriously, as in being the future of fashion? Or is that just, we are making a statement so we will become known, and that when you actually go into the hard world, the hard fashion world, that things are a good deal more mundane?
Well, I think many of them make their name by doing that. They come to the attention of the international designers, and they find work experience, or they find work, and hopefully some of them will come back to Ireland in due course. But I think it's a very important part, as you know, you might be familiar with Create the Show, you know, that supports young designers in Ireland. And that's a very, very important, very, very important show. And I have seen many excellent people over the years who've come through that show and gone on to better things. So it's about, you know, that's what you expect from young people. You expect them to be, to look at the world in a different light and look at it, you know, say what excitement can I bring? What's new? What gets talking about this particular garment or otherwise? Men and women alike. There's a huge amount of talent, and the schools deserve huge credit in fostering that talent and supporting that talent, as do the businesses.
I'm going to take another quick break there, Breed, because then we'll get back into it. We're going to get back to the masterclass. You better think of some really great insights, because the world is hanging on your every word. De Facto backs your business, so please back them by buying the world's best shaving oil, defactoshave.com. And as creator Tom Murphy keeps reminding people, it's a shaving oil, not a beard oil, so it's for everyone that shaves. That's why he says it's the best anyone can get.
Subscribe today to That Great Business Show on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple and Spotify. ISME is the independent SME association, looking after the interests of all types of businesses across Ireland. ISME membership includes invaluable HR and general advice, training, promotional tools, members' discounts, events, and networking with fellow SMEs. ISME membership starts from €195 with easy pay options. ISME. Join today at isme.ie or email membership@isme.ie.
Bridget O'Donoghue, back to you. In terms of insights, give me two or three further brilliant ideas that, in particular, young Irish, in this case, businesses in the fashion business, maybe, that you share with them. Because I know that you, in fact, you were telling me just before recording this, that you were advising or mentoring a very well-known young brand. What are you telling them on how to go international? I presume you're saying go international.
Well, I think, first of all, I think education is very important, you know, in anybody's life, whatever kind of business you're in the fashion business, equally so. So I'd say continuous education. Secondly, be extremely curious and use your eyes. Curious in every way. Be paranoid about the competition. I think that's extremely important. Know what is sold, who's selling it, you know, and that is something that the Primark management would be very good, have always been very good at.
But if you're a small business, your curiosity is one thing, but trying to figure out what the opposition is up to, is that actually possible?
Of course it is, because they have opposition in terms of a lot of other small businesses too. If you think of Ireland, it's a lot of it is made up of MSEs. But I'd say to them as well, you must take a risk. You must have courage. You must show independence. You must always do the right thing in whatever that is and whatever business that you're in and be guided by that. You must, you know, understand the differences, understand the values and be guided by a generous heart and spirit, because it's love, you know, the world over that encourages people. So these are broad kind of messages. In the retailing business, you would tell them, read everything you can get your hands on.
Such as? Give me, what would be your top reads be?
All the fashion magazines, whether it's Vogue or whether it's Bazaar, if you look at that, you know.
What's on your own reading list?
Now I read a lot of business things, yeah. I read Financial Times every day. I read The Economist every week. At the moment, I am reading John Simpson's book, since you call it, about friends in Beijing, as well as Samantha Powers, which I have just finished.
I'm thinking more about on your fashion reading list.
The Vogue and Bazaar, or any, and also the not just the Irish, not just the UK versions, the Spanish versions, the American versions, give you a bit picture. WGSN is a great tool. You look at that, you'll see whatever fashion show on the world was there last night. That'll tell you what people were wearing, what the different age groups are doing. Men, women and children. And it's also about, you know, I tell them, by being curious, be in the shops, have your feet on the ground, talk to your suppliers, do good networking. That's really important. Have your own network, people, women, whether it's women in business, women and men in business, that you can really learn from each other. And as a small business, sharing HR, people and culture is often a problem for small businesses. They're very good at hiring people. They're less good at, when the time comes, to say it's not working out. So that's a particular issue.
And tell me the Breege O'Donoghue way of telling people this is not working out.
Straight up, you know, across the table. No, you have a process, you have a procedure, you follow it, you do it with dignity, and there are no surprises. Ensure that there are no surprises, because in many cases, it may not be the employee. You know, I haven't, in my lifetime, I haven't come across many bad employees. Very few.
Really?
But, you know, I have had a few, I have come across management in that capacity. So I think that's what, believe in the people, get the best out of them, ensure they have a pride in their work, have them engaged, empower them, whether that's small or large, see they're empowered, give them as much responsibility as you can, give them opportunity to learn. These are young, educated people. Pile more on their shoulders and see how they can grow. Have a path for them. See where, even in a small business, in the first couple of years, this is where we see it going. I think these things are really important. But if it's about product, know your product. Know what it's made of. Know where it's come from. Know what is in that fabric. Know how that fabric sits, how it will make up. And these are just all learnings like anything else. Know how a product is engineered, you know, etc. And also, you know, there are other tools like that are there to avail of those. Where are the suppliers getting their ideas? Because you're normally dealing with big suppliers anyway, and they've been in business for a long time. So what are they doing? Yeah, you're getting into their rooms. Who are they making for? You know, they're not going to tell you, but you'll have a fair idea and you'll see what's happening. You know, a year, 2 years in advance, maybe.
2 years.
It could be. I think it's more, you know, a couple of seasons in advance, for example, for basic product. Obviously for fashion product, for what you might call fashion product, the turnaround time is lesser.
Now, we're not talking about now, because we'll get onto that shortly. How hard did you work when it was full on in Primark?
Oh, we gave it our all. But you know, it never, honestly...
No, that's not a number.
No, we did work. We did work hard because we had... communication was a key thing, you know. We did work hard. We put in the time, but it wasn't...
9 to 5?
No. But it wasn't about hours.
7 till 12?
It was about the outcome. I never counted the hours. It was never necessary. I was happy in what I was doing. And I was highly motivated. And I had, you know, I had great pride, great joy.
Come on, I need an idea. Did you work 7 days a week?
Did
you ever take a holiday?
I did, yeah.
Short holidays?
Oh, maybe shorter than maybe normal, but it depended.
And you said you had great motivation.
Yeah.
Was that pound notes or was it something else?
Oh, there were all kinds of things. It was a great business to work in. You know, we're very fortunate with an outstanding and excellent parent, you know, who was support there with the financial. If we needed, we didn't have to really worry about the banks. We didn't have to worry about the city. And it was really very helpful to us. All we had to worry about was our own business. And we had freedom. Not freedom in the abstract, but we had very, 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 very good freedom. We were well rewarded, well taken care of. We were valued and we were made a contribution and we were admired, you know, in terms of the whole group business. So that was, and it was fun. And it was, every day we had an argument and every day we talked a lot on the phone, very, very expensive phones when we weren't at the desk or elsewhere. We traveled a lot. We were on the ground a lot. You know, we would be in the, you know, the Saturday morning, you're in the stores, you're looking at your customers. So we were all part of that team.
You mentioned that Saturday morning trip to the UK.
Or Sunday, sure.
When did you come home?
Oh, probably Saturday night late.
Ah, okay. So
or it could be Sunday.
Day.
I remember several times going off to the shows in Paris, the weekend shows or whatever. Oh, yeah. Off at 6:30 in the morning and back at midnight. So that was just fine and a lot of fun out of the day and, you know, that.
And your daily argument, what would that be over?
Oh, it was generally about someone wants to do X, I want to do A, and somebody else wants to do B. It was probably about a difference, you know, it might be about a new location, a new store opening in those days in terms of a location. It might be about, you know, and so the buying teams are pretty well independent. You know, of course, they presented their merchandise and they were experts. Of course, there was, so, you know, from their point of view, they were kings in their own business.
And who chose the style? Now, I know we've talked about buyers and all, but at some stage, somebody had to press the go button that this year it's going to be mauve and it's going to be this shape and whatever. And it comes back to that other question that I had earlier, which is the different jurisdictions, that it may be mauve in Ireland, but it may be green in UK.
It's not that simple, clearly, because, you know, if it was going to be mauve in Ireland, you'd be out of business tomorrow. You know, if you're offering just one sample, there would be nothing. No, it's a whole team of people in terms of the buyers, the merchandisers, the technologists, the designers, the financial people. And they come together as a team. The buyers put the range to it. They do all their research from travels all over the world, or virtual, whatever it might be, whether it's fashion shows, everything from what they read, from what they see, from what they've seen a couple of years ago. It might be what the fabrics were like in Japan, you know, which was always a very good source for sourcing fabrics. And then that comes together. They have the financial, the designers are there in terms of, so they're doing their own work. They're doing a similar thing in terms of designs, in terms of styles. The technologists are there in terms of whether it's helping them in every aspect of technology and what that is. And then you have the merchandisers who are responsible for, you know, with the financial people for the numbers, you know, in terms of, and it's really down to a fine art, you know. And so far as, you know, if a truck is coming into Mary Street, you can be absolutely assured on the back of the truck what first comes off is the garments that are to go on the floor, and the hangers are already waiting for them, you know. So, and the other, you know, so it's very, 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 very fine detail. Because obviously handling costs a lot of money. Yeah. So that is the kind of detail. And it's not just any one person. And Rangers are presented by all of that team to the board on a number of occasions throughout the year, whether that is the summer range, the spring range, the autumn range, and also, and to all of the management, because, you know, there could be, at current times, there could be 1,000 managers at a conference, and here they are.
There could be management.
So what are they seeing? They're seeing all the Rangers, some capsule of what's coming in for the autumn. So they're prepared. They know exactly what they're getting. They know when they're getting. They know how much they're getting. They know how many weeks they have to sell it. And they have a great input, because they might say, I love that. I can sell a lot more of that. So there's tremendous communication between the buying and between the buying teams and the retail management. And that's that works extremely well. And that's always been the case, not just now.
You see, once you say X, I have to pick up on X. And you asked me, I know, the way back, what were my questions? And I said to you, whatever you say to me, I'll ask you another question. You've just raised something in my head there, the first one is that you mentioned something there about how long they have to sell them.
Hmm.
So winter coats, I'm making this up now, is that you have 6 weeks to sell
and then they're gone again. It depends. Because the winter is different at different times in different places, you know.
Can you swap a winter here to a winter in another jurisdiction?
But it mightn't work.
Yeah.
No, you know.
It is a logistical nightmare.
No. Well, that's what the experience and all of that together. But you have a lot of very excellent people, and also, you know, Penny's and Primark invest hugely in their people. And those, they have, and it's the people who grow with Penny's and Primark. And you see, there's a high, very high level of retention and a very high level of promotion. So they know the business really well. They know their customers. They know what's going to sell. They also know what's not going to sell. You know, they're not going to have red sailors, you know, in the springtime.
We keep referring to it as Penny's, Primark. We won't go into the whole legal thing there, because there was a legal case and that was fine. Did it ever come to the board to change the Penny's name to Primark?
I think we'd have a riot in Ireland.
Yeah, maybe. We're kind of very used to now speaking about both, do we not? No?
No, we know that there's Penny's. A huge brand loyalty.
There is, actually, yeah.
Huge brand loyalty, yeah.
If you were not the doyen of fashion, that I will call you, what would you have liked to have done? Now, I know you're in hospitality. Was there anything else that you would have absolutely loved to have done?
Well, I think it's a bit late now to be thinking about that, you know.
No, it's not. It's just asking yourself, just, you know.
Well, I think, you know, I had a very, very lovely, outstanding career. Was always very happy and very fulfilled. Continuous education, because I was a late student going to university. So continuous education was always something important to me, and I was able to avail of that. As was also Arthur Ryan encouraged me or supported me being involved in other businesses from as early on as the early 80s in terms of being involved in state boards. So in a sense, you know.
What was his thinking on that one? Was that to give you experience or to, what was,
oh, did he wanted? I think it was by way of support. You know, support, and he knew it was something that I would have liked. And he did see value in it, because he saw the value of, you know, having experience elsewhere in terms of outside eyes. So I think it was a combination of those two things that.
Now, back to my original question.
Yeah.
What would you have liked to have done? Were you not in either hospitality?
I've been an astronaut or something like that.
Well, that's maybe it is.
Yeah.
You saw that lady who went up recently.
I know.
Is there anything like that? Just anything at all?
Oh, that would have been very interesting. You know, lots of things I wouldn't have really liked to have done. It would have been something to do with people. It could have been the caring profession as well. It could have been the education profession. I think, you know, for me, it's about something in which you are happy, fulfilled, that you feel you're contributing, you're productive, you're valued, and you're supported. You know, and that has been throughout my career, for which I'm most grateful.
Now, I'll get on to your current career in a second, but I think I actually forgot to tell you that we have a final, almost final question in this case that we ask every guest about who would they hire in a heartbeat. If you were to choose anybody anywhere, is there anybody that you would just say, oh my God, if that person was available to me, yes, please?
Well, I'm not just going to name names, because there are so many people.
I don't want you to name names.
No, I'm not going to name any names. But there are many people that I've come across in many businesses, and you know, for some reason or another, may not have wound up in Primark. Some outstanding, excellent people. You know, you're looking for someone who has a cultural fit.
I'm thinking about if you were running the Bridget Donoghue company, not Primark or Primark.
I'd hire someone that I knew was much better than myself. That's one thing I would do. And there are many people like that.
Name a name, please.
No, I'm not naming anybody.
Everybody seems to like Richard Branson. Would you like Richard Branson?
Maybe Bono might fit my book. Because he is, you know, you think of what he has achieved, yeah,
in the world. Oh, he's incredible.
Yeah.
An incredibly creative man. Yeah. Okay, what are you doing now besides, and I'm deliberately saying this, besides your two yoga classes a day?
Oh, no, that's a little bit of an exaggeration. That's
only
sometimes.
You told me the other day that you had just said...
It happened. It happened that day, yeah. It happens, but not often.
What else are you doing?
Well, I do a number of things.
You do many things.
Yeah, I do some work for Primark in terms of, you know, the DNA of the business. So I act in an ambassadorial fashion when it arises. I'm also a member of the pensions board in Primark, and that's quite an interesting one. Having had to chair during the COVID periods, I chair three boards. One is a state board and two are private businesses. I sit on two other boards. Another board I'm on is the advisory board of SmartFit and on the cabinet of TU Dublin, the president's cabinet. And, you know, I do a certain amount of voluntary work. And of course, I go to the gym, I cycle, I go to my yoga, I do my Pilates. I follow sport. I have been absolutely addicted to the Olympics. My heart was in my mouth this morning watching Kelly. I was afraid, you know, it was so close. And as for, you know, the early morning, I couldn't go to bed until I had seen Paul and his colleague, and all I was saying is pull like a dog, pull like a dog.
And
of course, in sport was a great thing in pennies, you know, and that's why I say the fun. If you think about 1990, the World Cup. I mean, we were very involved because we had we did major charity for the Children's Hospital. Mick McCarthy supporting us as he was our, you know, captain, and even before that, he was Captain Fantastic. So from the time, you know, of Stuttgart, from the time that Ray Harton threw that goal to the quarter final.
I was there.
The happiest day of my life. I know that. And of course, we did the teams for the outfits for many years to the quarterfinal in Rome. And, you know, I recall on those days, whether, you know, if I talk about them, for example, first of all, the T-shirts, you know, the T-shirts were virtually wet coming in the morning. You know, we're playing, for example, Holland. So what's the heading? What's this logo? Send them tulips from Amsterdam. I recall we were playing Egypt on that Sunday with a drastic result. Send them back down the Nile on the quarterfinal in Rome. Kick ass on Italian grass. We had we were selling a record. The team that Jack built again for the Children's Hospital. We actually got a platinum record for selling more than 250,000, the highest ever in Ireland. You couldn't get into Penny's one door unless you bought a record, and you certainly didn't get out the other door unless you bought another one. And of course, as well as we were selling Mick McCarthy's book again for charity. And of course, the managers had league tables. So the more they sold, they had a better chance of going to the next match. They won something to the next match. And I remember an occasion when just before the quarterfinal in Rome, and there were a number of people going to that because they had won, you know, as part of the league tables. However, there were these four gentlemen who were sporting fanatics, and I said to them, you know, I was having a cup of coffee with them, and I said, "Now, really, guys, I'm really sorry. I've got one ticket. And the only thing I can think to do is we'll have a little competition." So I had a table laid out, pink jotters, pink little pens, spell Scalacci.
Okay.
They were writing like you're 6 years old.
Yeah.
Now, of course, we had four tickets.
Oh, good.
But that was the fun, you know. And we had people ringing us, "Breege, I ran out of money," or "I'm staying an extra 3 days. Tell my wife you've said, if my wife rings you, tell her that you okayed it," etc. But it was absolutely
an extraordinary time.
And so that was part of the business, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It didn't really matter who came to work. because there was someone there to fill in. They arranged it all between themselves. It was like when the Pope came to Ireland, you know, on that day, and the 1st of October, 1979. It was just like that. You could do anything. So that was part and parcel
extraordinary times.
So sport was always, whether it was the rugby, whether it was the soccer, you know, whatever it was, we were in sport. But that was major.
Bridge, I did call this the Bridge O'Donoghue Show. I think I'm going to have a Bridge O'Donoghue series. You are just pure entertainment. You're a most brilliant guest. And if I had my choice of Hire in a Heartbeat, you'd be that. And I'd also, if I had a choice of a dinner party guest, you'd be it. Bridge O'Donoghue, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show. And that is it from That Great Business Show, episode 46. As always, my thanks to the team here at the Dublin Podcast Studio, home of Ireland's best podcast sound engineers. We have curry and rice on the sound menu this week. Honest. Rob Curry was our in-studio sound engineer, and Peter Rice spices things up in post-production, making us, without a doubt, the world's best-sounding podcast. And yet again, my thanks to Paula Fitzsimons, who heads up the Going for Growth program, for helping us secure Breach. We know that lots of you in business are starting your own podcasts. That's our business, so if you'd like us to produce podcasts for you, please do get in touch. And we also want your ads. If you want to talk to Ireland's SME community, That Great Business Show is the way to do it. Email producer@thatgreatbusinessshow.com, where you can find out all about our advertising packages. And if you know of a great business that should be featured on Ireland's Best Business Podcast, please do not hesitate. Tell us all about it on our website, thatgreatbusinessshow.com, or via our LinkedIn page, where we have great conversations with past, present, and future guests. Finally, my thanks to our sponsor, DeFactoShave.com, the world's best shaving oil. Try it for just a week, and like me, you'll be a forever convert. So from me, Conal O'Moran, until next week, Slán tomáth.